What is up, everybody? It is 9:43 p.m. here, Monday night in Korea. And I was just doing some streaming earlier today. I've been loving streaming for you guys. If you haven't seen it already, go to Tasteless TV under Twitch, and we can hang out there. It's been an absolute blast. Took a quick shower, came out. Now I'm doing this recording. So this episode is with James Chen. Now, I've been following this guy's career for a long time. You know, I'm sure as many of you guys know, I've been working in esports for, I think, almost 15 years now. And so there were not many people doing this in the early days. And so James Chen was one of them. And I've always really had a lot of respect for this guy. He's an FGC legend, amazing commentator. He also did commentary for the Tetris World Finals. I know a lot of people saw that. You might not have realized that was also James Chen doing that. That was actually one of the most watched esports events that you can find on the internet. It was a very cool tournament. If you haven't seen the Tetris World Championships, definitely check it out. This is also the last recording I did at Evo in Tokyo. This is all before coronavirus. I have another recording we've already finished that we're going to be putting out in a week or two here. We will be debuting episodes after this one on Twitch on Fridays. It's going to be a little bit tricky to set up, but once we have that all ready to go, all of the rest of the episodes will be after the pandemic went global. I really thought that each of these episodes would be pretty timeless, but of course we couldn't anticipate this world-changing pandemic coming here. So sorry we weren't able to talk about that. Again, this was basically recorded right when it started to grow in China. Also, I want to give a shout-out to everybody that worked at Evo and the FGC in general. This is the first event I went to where I wasn't commentating, but I was just trying to grab people and do interviews. They are really helpful getting me all these great interviews, and thank God they did, because it's become much harder to get interviews. Nobody's traveling anywhere now. I'm really glad I had these ones stocked up that I could give you guys. I think you're going to enjoy this one a lot. And before we start, again, like I always say, patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. If you're listening to this and you've been meaning to donate, it really would be appreciated. Again, we're going to a higher level of production, which means it's going to cost more. And so any support you can give is appreciated. Now that we have, you know, video and everything else, it just costs a little bit more. And if you don't have the money, of course, it's no problem at all. And without further ado, I give you this episode with James Chen.
All right, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. So you've been full time now. Is it 3 years? Is that correct?
About three to 4 years now. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And how much are you on the road then for that?
It depends on the time of the year, obviously, because there's like busy season and there's slow season and stuff like that. But actually, these days, with as many fighting game events as there have been, like January is supposed to be kind of like a slow period. But I mean, here we're in Japan.
Yeah.
Right now. So, I mean, I would probably say on average, I travel maybe about like twice a month or something like that. So
what is that like? Because in my experience with, first of all, it's cool that you get to see the world.
Yes.
Right? Especially when you consider that a lot of people would view what we do as like antisocial or, you know, but the reality is when you work at a job like this, you actually get to see the world.
Yeah. But
is that tiring, being on airplanes that much and hotels that much?
I mean, honestly, the part that hurts the most is I'm away from my cats.
How many cats do you have?
I just two cats. Okay. Yeah, I love
me
my
too.
Cats. They're adorable. But you know, that's the toughest part right now. But I mean, to be honest with you, right now at this point, it's weird. It's almost kind of like you're almost getting kind of desensitized to traveling after a while. Sometimes I even forget where I'm at, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I just end up going around all over the place, and it's wild. And honestly, like, if you had ever told me that I would end up like in Spain or Kuwait because of video games, I would have laughed at you, you know.
Yeah.
10 years ago. And it's really amazing. And you know, regardless of what happens with me with commentary or whatever, you know, having been able to do that and see, I mean, the one thing that I always say is that geeks and nerds all over the world are all the same. It's fantastic. I love that part. You know, like when we go to Kuwait, they love cosplaying as much as anybody. In fact, when they do cosplay contests, they have performances and stuff like that. They put up. It's really great to see that kind of thing. And no matter, you know, how whatever I end up doing in the next 5 years or whatever like that, this chunk of my life feels like it's just been absolutely worth it. You know, we're in Japan. Like I said, I have never managed to come to Japan until the first Evo Japan, and you know,
this is your second time here.
This is my third time here. Yes, okay. But every single time is for Evo Japan.
Yeah,
and I had never been to Japan before then, and so you know, now because of video games, because of fighting games, I've been here 3 times, and you know, every time I'm out here in Japan, I have such a great time, and all this, like, as much as traveling can be tiring and everything, but you know, at the same time, to be able to do it. Especially, you know, at the age that I'm at right now, because a lot of people don't get a chance to do this until, you know, retired or whatever like that. So I do feel very, very blessed to be able to travel and see all these different places and meet all these different people, see these different communities. It's just, like I said, it's great to see that the passion for video games, for geek culture, for that kind of stuff really is a universal thing, you know, that no matter where you go, you think that, you know, people are different, but really the more you travel, the more you see that people are the same. You know, one of my favorite stories recently, you know, in the Tekken scene with Pakistan kind of going crazy. Nee just went there to practice before the Tekken World Tournament. And when he showed up, he had like a hero's welcome at the airport. Like there was all these fans in the airport to welcome Nee in Pakistan. Like how weird of a sentence is that? And to me, that's fantastic. You know, that kind of thing shows how universal and, you know, how wonderful gaming can really bring everybody together. I'm sure you've experienced that a bunch of times.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's crazy. Like the countries I've been able to go to and just seeing kind of this thing that brings everybody together, you know, that there's nerds everywhere. and you know, it doesn't matter what language we speak, the fact that we can come together and compete and share the same passion is so cool. It's also crazy because, you know, the world's getting more and more connected. I mean, this Pakistan situation is a perfect example. I don't think anybody knew that there was a major scene for Tekken in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Not just that there's a major scene, but that they are actually...
like some of the world's best.
Yeah. They're actually better than a lot of the other places in the world. And I think we're going to see more and more of that as the world continues to open up.
Yeah.
I think actually, and I know that some people, I mean, shit on cell phone games. But the truth is, with cell phone games coming out, I think it's just going to get more and more wired together.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with jet lag traveling that much? Because I found for me, that is the hardest thing, is trying to be on camera. You're trying to shout, you're trying to entertain, you're trying to analyze, but it's actually 4 a.m. where your body clock is set, you know?
Red Bull. No, I mean, honestly, one of the things, for example, flying here just a couple of days ago, I didn't sleep on the plane at all. I forced myself to stay up, and then by the time I got to the hotel, I had been up for like 24 hours, and so I was like, okay, I can pass out at night now. But I mean, honestly, traveling west, like going from California, Los Angeles to Japan is always easier for some reason than traveling east.
Like, yeah, I've experienced that too, actually.
I don't know what it is. Like last year, after I came back from Evo Japan, my sleep schedule was decimated. I could not, like my sleep schedule was so messed up. So hopefully when I get back this time, I mean... melatonin, you know.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
Sleep pills kind of thing like that. Hopefully, you know, to be trying to fix it quicker this time. But, I mean, honestly, the jet lag stuff is kind of tricky. But, again, weirdly enough, even when I'm back in Los Angeles and my sleep schedule is normal, like I'm going to bed at like 5 a.m. anyway and waking up at like 1 and stuff. My sleep schedule's so messed. I don't even have a normal sleep schedule, so... you know,
how many hours are you casting a day when you're down at an event like this?
It really depends on the event, actually. Most of the time, if it's like a Capcom Pro Tour event, the nice thing about it is Tenno, the guys who usually have been doing it the past few years, you know, they'll have like four commentators and they'll cycle us with 2 hour blocks and everything like that. So usually, you know, at most, if it's like some crazy kind of event going on, I'll do like maybe 8 hours a day, but usually it's around 6 to 4 a day in 2 hour chunks.
Yeah.
So, which is actually, I mean, when me and David first started doing this, I still remember Capcom 25th anniversary tournament, which was before, you know, the first Capcom Cup. We were the only commentators for that event. It was for Street Fighter 4, Street Fighter Cross Tekken, and Super Turbo. And we cast like over 12 hours. Like we just cast like 12 hours straight. And it was the one of the most painful.
Yeah, I've done that personally. This is back when MLG was hosting a lot of StarCast.
Yeah.
But there's something uniquely painful about trying to be on when you've already been on air for like that. And you're trying to shout and you're trying to.
Can I ask you this question? Have you almost ever fallen asleep on a stream, on a broadcast?
I have been with somebody. I'm not going to say names, but I've been with somebody who started to pass out and I had to hit him. It was not artosis before people asked.
Okay.
I find if I've been talking for that long, I start to slur my speech.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I almost sound like I'm drunk or something. Like, my mouth gets tired, and then I'll just start to space out.
Yeah,
My co-host will say something I didn't listen to them at all.
Right.
And I'll see them looking at me, waiting for me to answer. And I have no idea what I'm... Yeah. And then I'll end up saying what they just said anyways. So that's what happens to me.
Like, honestly, I almost fell out of my chair one time. And one of the guy streaming looked at me, who was like, really? I was so tired. Oh, man. But yeah.
Dude, how do you prep for commentary? Or is there a lot of prep? Because you've been in the FGC for so long.
Right.
Your Twitter profile says you're an FGC historian, which I like that. Do you need to sit down and do research before you cast, or are you just able to show up because you've known these players for so long?
It depends on the game. Like if it's Street Fighter, you know, my prep work usually just happens when I try to play as much as possible, you know, because you just play and you get a feel for the characters and everything, and you get hit by certain things and you know what the opponents are trying to do. So that's mostly where it comes from. But from like the history standpoint, it's also hard too, because, you know, fighting game tournaments have, you know, like Smash Ultimate here this weekend has like 3,000 competitors, right?
Yeah.
So it's like there's no way to research all of them, right? So you kind of just jump on and hope for the better, you know? And if you see certain people that you do know, and that's one of the things that I try my best to do, is I try to remember all like the really interesting, funny things or specific things that have happened to certain players, you know? Because to me, you know, I feel like the players are the most important thing. You know, in the end, it's weird for me to say this, but I feel like the game almost kind of doesn't matter as much as the players do. And that was emphasized the most when Dragon Ball FighterZ came out, and it was all about Goichi versus Sonic Fox, right? Goichi is an anime game player, plays a little Street Fighter. Sonic Fox is the greatest NRS player of all time. They gain this rivalry in a tertiary game in Dragon Ball FighterZ, and no matter what, every time they played against each other, you had to watch. It didn't matter if you liked the game or not. You just had to see who was going to beat each other, and they just had this great story. I mean, Sonic Fox won the first Evo, and then Goichi won the second one against each other. And, you know, it just shows that, you know, let's say a completely brand, well, let's say like the Riot fighting game comes out here, right? The Riot fighting game comes out. If it's like Daigo and Justin Wong get into the game and then they end up playing each other, like that's like, oh my gosh, they played each other way back then and here they are again. And like, that's the important part, you know, the Daigo Justin history is the important part, more so than whatever it is that they're playing, you know? And so for me, when I commentate, I try as best as I can to, you know, humanize, make the players as human as possible, because that's what creates fans, that creates people who, you know, whenever you want to root for someone, you're just that much more invested.
Yeah.
You know?
I got to ask this now, since you just mentioned the Riot game. What is your take on Riot in general, and what are your thoughts for them making a fighting game. And let me just preface that with Riot is, out of all the companies, the one that exhibits the most control over their games.
Yes. Yeah,
they
yeah.
seem to have really succeeded in pushing League of Legends as a successful esport. That game is actually older than StarCraft II even, and it's huge.
Okay. All right.
What is it going to be like when they show up into the fighting game community?
It's such an interesting situation. So, I mean, obviously with Riot, you know, I've always been, you know, jealous almost kind of the fact that, you know, you have this situation where Riot can just like be like, oh, you know what, let's push these events as much as possible and everything. Fighting game community is in this weird position that we support so many different games from different companies. So we can't have Capcom be like the big guns, because then they can be like, no Mortal Kombat this event. You know, as a fighting game community, we don't want that. We pride ourselves in having everything in there. And so what's going to be interesting with Riot is, you know, they have had the control. Like, I know the commentators used to not be allowed to stream other games, you know, or other MOBAs and stuff like that. Yeah, I heard that's changed now, right?
Yeah, there was some story that broke, if I remember right. Like, they... Yeah, I think they were not allowed. I think they were streaming Hearthstone was the game.
Because
it takes a while to queue up at high ranks.
Oh, okay.
And so there was this, I think, kind of crisis at Riot where even if the game said they were playing League of Legends, they would be Hearthstone on the screen.
Right,
so it was
this great
advertisement for Blizzard.
Right.
I think they've eased up, though.
I've heard about that. But, I mean, before, like, commentators, they couldn't commentate other games, the players, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But what's fascinating about this whole entire thing is that the people who are working on the Riot game are the company used to be called Radiant, right? It's run by Tom and Tony Cannon. They're the guys who created Evo, right? Like, they're literally the guys who made Evo. They're literally the guys who made, you know, who basically kept the FGC alive for this long chunk of time. And so it's weird. If Riot actually was like, oh, well, this fighting game can't be with everything else, it's weird because they run Evo. So I feel like there's an... I mean, again, I don't want to, like, put any pressure on Tom and Tony Cannon or accidentally say anything. So, again, this is all me. Like, no, there's... I don't have any insight, but you know, it'd be interesting. Like, I'm hoping that, you know, from their standpoint, they can explain why the FGC is such a different beast than a lot of the other, you know, games out there, than a lot of the other esports out there. And you know, if we can get a situation where Riot Fighting Game can just be another game at these events and everything like that, I think that would be fantastic. You know, again, I like the fact that the FGC is very diverse with the different kind of genres of games and everything. And even right now, we're seeing this kind of shift where, you know, Tekken 7 is really kind of climbing to the top. And a lot of people would probably say it's probably surpassed Street Fighter 5 in popularity.
It seems like it's bigger now.
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of what I like about the FGC, is that it's a very organic thing that, you know, we play. And even at some tournaments, like I was just at a tournament in Chicago, Frosty Faustings, last weekend, and I'm commentating Super Turbo, which is like a game that's older than some of the players.
It's an old game.
And so we still support old game. We play whatever we want to have fun, you know. There was a fighting game on the Super Nintendo based on the Sailor Moon property, Sailor Moon S, that's just had this random resurgence all of a sudden. It's like one of the most busted games ever, but for some reason, everyone just started playing it again. And now it's at like a bunch of events and people are playing it. So
it's an interesting point that you make about fighting games. I guess they all rely on each other in a weird way. Because if you look at like Dota and League of Legends, like those are two completely different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't play each other's games.
Yep. You don't have one event that has both of them. You know?
There's no tournament where there's literally never been a tournament where there's Dota and League.
Even like at a DreamHack or something like that.
Someone can fact check me on this. But
DreamHack is like everything, right? So
yeah,
you know.
But I believe that they get told.
Oh, really?
From what I understand, yeah, because they don't want an advertisement for another game.
Okay.
I mean, they're the two big MOBAs, right?
Right.
But yeah, I think they've actually set it up in such a way that that's not the case.
Okay.
Because I know ESL does Dota. There was a period where Riot was hands off.
And
as times passed, they've exerted more and more control, and they basically run everything now. So
right.
But I think at the time there was never a time where they were there together. But with fighting games, it's kind of the opposite. Is that because they're often played on consoles and so the setup can be different, or that the publishers are more laid back? Is there a reason for that?
It's really all from the arcade culture. One of the interesting things about the fighting game community is, even though we're not playing in arcades anymore, the established people who kept the tournaments running and everything like that, and just the personality, the attitude, the mentality has always been very arcade based, right? The reason why we have these open tournaments where anyone can play is because that's how it was in the arcade. You put up a quarter, you played, right? We might not like you. We may not know who you are, but if you put up the quarter, you were allowed to play. We tried to beat you as badly as you could to scare you away from the arcade and stuff like that. But there were times you would see this. I mean, it happened to me. Like, I would go to an arcade. Nobody knew who I was. Everyone didn't like me. But then I proved that I was strong enough to go toe-to-toe with the strongest of players. And then I became friends with them. You know, yeah, it's like there's that concept that anybody can rise to the top. Now, at the arcades, usually you'd go there and, like, for example, when we used to play Capcom versus SNK2 at Southern Hills Golfland, Alex Vai, one of the greatest players of all time, fighting game players of all time, he would run the CVS2 cabinet, right? So he'd just be on there, and there's just the one CVS2 cabinet there, and there's like 15, 20 quarters on there, and everyone's trying to beat him, and no one can beat him. But whenever you lost, you had to wait a long time for you to get, and so people would just go and play the other fighting games, you know, like you would just go play the other machines and everything like that. And so that kind of mentality of, you know, you play all the games, you know, like the fighting games is just something that you do, you know, that it doesn't matter which one you kind of play. And it's different now because there's definitely a lot more players who are very specialized. Like, you look at someone like Tokido, he used to go to Evo and walk away with like 7 medals hanging around his chest. Now he only plays Street Fighter V. Yep. That's a sign of how strong the competition is now. But then there are still players like a Goichi, like a Kazunoko, who play like everything and still, and so that kind of idea that all the fighting games live within one kind of umbrella, I feel like has been maintained well through the generation, even through this generational change, you know. And it's just I don't know, maybe it'll stop at some point, but as long as, you know, like old guys like me and stuff are still around, you know, hopefully we can. I've always said it, you know, like, I feel like a rising tide raises all boats, right? So no matter, you know, like Street Fighter, if you don't like Street Fighter, but then they kind of popularize the world tour concept that all the fighting games are doing and stuff like that, you know, like, by supporting all the fighting games, I just feel like we all benefit from it. But, you know, like I said, I've always been kind of a love all fighting games kind of guy. Yeah. So
I've wondered, and I don't know if this is because all these fighting game tournaments have all these different games that are made by different companies, but and maybe this is just a Japanese thing, I don't know, but companies collaborating, like putting Akuma in Tekken, like that, something like that would never happen. Right. And a lot of these competitive PC games is how, what, I don't know if you have an answer for this, but why is that? How is that happening? How is that possible?
I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. I mean, I know, for example, Harada and Ono are friends, right? Yeah. I mean, Harada like teases Ono all the time, and they've done like little videos with each other and stuff like that. So maybe they were just like, hey, you know, I mean, obviously Capcom made Street Fighter Cross Tekken. And so, you know, Tekken was probably like, oh, we'll test things out by throwing Akuma here, because they were supposed to make a Tekken Cross Street Fighter, which never happened. And so, you know, they probably just was like working on Tekken, on Akuma, and like, let's put him here and everything. But I mean, that's not even the extent of it, right? Like, there was this random, I don't want to call it random because I don't want to, you know, disparage the scene or anything. But, you know, there was a very indie kind of fighting game called Fighting EX Lair, which was based off of the Street Fighter EX series and stuff. You know, but Terry Bogard was in there from the King of Fighters games, you know. And yeah, there's like crossovers all over the place. And I don't know. Why? I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's so different than anything. Uh-huh. And I guess even with, I mean, you know, Nintendo with Smash, of course, and them just kind gobbling up other franchises and then putting them there. But this seems to be a huge trend that's in Japan, and it's not seen anywhere else.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe they're super good friends in Japan. I'm not sure how it happens, but I like it. I like seeing that kind of thing because it does create this little friendly kind of vibe going on. I mean, Haomaru from Samurai Showdown is supposed to show up in Soul Calibur 6 pretty soon, you know? And it's like, to me, I think that's cool because honestly, you know, it's smart business, I also think, from everybody, right? Because if I'm a Street Fighter player and I want to go and learn Tekken 7, I can start by playing Akuma. And honestly, the way they translated Akuma to Tekken, he doesn't even play like half the Tekken characters. He breaks all the Tekken rules. Like Tekken, you don't have to low block as much. You stand block more because low moves don't do as much damage. But Akuma's like completely different. Like yeah. He can kill you off of a low if he's close enough to you and stuff like that, you know. But it's still a good way to bring people in, you know what I mean? So it seems like it kind of makes sense. And I don't know, like, I guess the fighting game companies don't really see each other as, like, huge, threats, like, competition. Really? I don't know. That's a great question, it's just to be honest with you. Yeah.
And Blizzard, I mean, I don't work at Blizzard, but I've worked with them for stuff. And they're pretty cool. But even at times when I'm doing stuff they view as really important, I have been asked to not mention other games. I did Heroes of the Storm, which that league, unfortunately, is not around anymore.
Yeah.
But that was really sad when that happened. But... I did this thing on ESPN, and it was like I couldn't call them Ultras or Ultimates, which is what the super move is in League of Legends. We couldn't call it a MOBA.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
I had to like tailor the whole cast.
Interesting.
Because they didn't want to be the game was, what they call it, a hero brawler, which is like, I don't know what the fuck that
right.
is. But that's what they wanted me to
right,
call it.
Yeah,
I guess... And maybe there's legal reasons. I'm not sure. Yeah, they didn't want any of the jargon.
Yeah.
We couldn't call the, we can't call them champions. We had to call them heroes.
Okay.
Because the champions is a League of Legends thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just fascinated by this much collaboration. I don't know.
It was funny because when we first started doing the Capcom Pro Tour, you know, we were actually kind of told that we can't really name a lot of the other fighting games and stuff like that. I feel like I'm breaking NDAs or something like that. But
no, I kind of understand, but
right.
at the same time, I'm like, but is this really a threat?
But see, here's the interesting thing was that, you know, even though they said that, like, I know, like, both me and David and a lot of the other commentators, like, we kind of obeyed that at first, but then we just stopped caring kind of in a weird way. And I would just be like, yeah, you know what? You know, Itazan is really good at Virtua Fighter. We would, like, before it was like, he's really good at other fighting games. Now we're just like, he's really good at Virtua Fighter. And like, I you know, I don't know if it's just because we stopped caring or something like that, but you know, it's just gotten to that point. I know some leagues have stronger rules about what you can or can't say, but I know on like, when I'm doing commentary for like Capcom Pro Tour, I'll just talk about everything as if it's just one, you know, one scene, and it's just universal knowledge now.
Speaking of that, are there rules about cursing?
At Evo, we're not allowed to curse.
You're not allowed.
Right?
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
At Evo, we're not allowed to swear. Now on the Capcom Pro Tour stuff, you know, the guys who are running it have literally told me like, you are allowed to swear, but a lot of us won't.
Yeah, or you're not encouraged to swear.
Yeah. We try our best to keep it a little bit. But I mean, like, you know, Yipes, one of his, you know, classic terms is bus ass, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, they won't ding us for saying stuff like that. You know, we can say things like that. And I've said, like, you know, like, he looks like a whack ass something or other. You know, we've said stuff like that before on commentary, and they won't ding us for that kind of thing. But you know, just in general, we still want to be a little more, you know.
Yeah, we actually, like, when I do GSL, there is no regulations, like, so me and Dan for a while we experimented with cursing.
Oh yeah,
kind of just
okay.
And we ease away. I mean, if we really think it's going to help emphasize something, but you know, whenever we do it, people would think, oh my god, they're gonna get in trouble, or so we can actually say anything. But
right,
yeah, I just feel like it doesn't sound as good. I was just curious because I've seen cursing. And I mean, I'm not clutching my pearls over it. I don't care. But I'm just always curious as a commentator when I see it. Like, is there something happening? Is there ever a discussion about this?
Right. So. I mean, there's never really been any direct implicit, except like I said, at Evo, we can't swear for Evo. But you know, for a lot of other things, there hasn't really been any sort of like implicit, like you can't curse. Except like I said, there's certain world tours that you're not allowed to swear and stuff. But for the Capcom Pro Tour, they've never really forced us into that.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. What was it like casting Tetris? Because I watched that, and I don't think I brought this up, at least in this podcast. I'm actually a big fan of Tetris.
Oh, yeah? Okay,
I feel like it's
okay.
Like the purest
game.
Can you tell me a little bit about
the
cassette?
So, weirdly enough, as much as I do all this fighting game stuff, Tetris is my favorite video game of all time.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have Tetris shoes on right now. These are Tetris shoes right here. So, like, I love Tetris to death. It's always been my favorite game. And just like you, I think it's, like, the most pure video game ever made, right? Because you sit anyone down, don't tell them anything, and they drop a piece on top of the other one. They kind of know they did something wrong. Like, you don't even have to teach somebody. So it was interesting because they just put out a call on Facebook one time as the Classic Tetris group. They're like, we're just kind of auditioning new commentators or whatever. And I didn't even see it. A friend of mine who knew I loved Tetris, so I was like, you should apply to this, right? And I was like, okay. So I tried applying to it. And they're like, you're that fighting game guy, right? Do you know anything about Tetris? And I was like, I love Tetris.
Yeah.
And they actually got me to try it out. I auditioned and they were like, you know Tetris. And so I did this little exhibition match. And then they were like, do you want to come and do like the actual championships? And I was like, yes.
It was so crazy when I saw Tetris there. Because I always, it's like I think everybody knew.
Yeah.
There's so much potential with this game. But, you know, StarCraft is... I think a consumable game, even if you don't play. I would say fighting games are more consumable if you don't play because...
It's life bars. You know?
It's life bars. It's
someone's
two,
trying
it's
to
two
hit
avatars.
The other guy.
Yeah. But Tetris is just... It's just there. It's so easy to show somebody what's happening and
I don't think there's a human on the planet that hasn't tried playing Tetris at one point. And so when you see the players playing and they're playing at the speeds that they do, it's like you're automatically impressed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So this is something that I've always, you know, when I talk about fighting games, esports, kind of things like that, you know, one of the most viral videos was the Daigo Perry video, right? But like if no one told you anything about it, you would just be like whatever, but the fact that the crowd went crazy kind of gave you an indication that something amazing happened, right? That's the hardest thing I've always felt about esports, is that we're trying to convince everybody that the things that people do are skillful, right?
Right.
Because, you know, if you are not even, I call them A-sports, athletic sports, as a joke, you know, but, you know, even if you're not a fan of, you know, actual sports and stuff like that, physical sports, you know, if you turn on to ESPN and you see a highlight of LeBron James dunking on somebody, you're like, I don't know anything about basketball, but you just assume that it's amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so the hardest thing about fighting games, you know, there's reputations that it's button mashy or, you know, or if you're watching like a MOBA or StarCraft.
It's fascinating what people assume is not happening.
Right. And, you know, if you show an amazing play, sometimes people don't understand why it's amazing, right? But in Tetris... Because everybody's tried playing Tetris. When you see someone doing stuff and your brain can't process where the pieces are going, like you already are just like, I can't believe these guys are this fast. Like, like you don't have to have played it expertly to know that they're being amazing at Tetris. And that's why, to me, Tetris is like one of the most like pure video games and why it has this weird appeal for
people. Is there one company that just owns Tetris?
Yeah, it's the Tetris Company right now.
Is it the Tetris Company is what it's called?
Yeah, it's called the Tetris. Okay. It's like Tetris Company and then, oh gosh.
Are they owned by a larger conglomerate?
I don't want to... it's like Blue Ocean, Blue something or other. So basically, the story with Tetris is that, you know, when Alexey Pajitnov made it in Russia... bunch of people pretended they had the license for it, whatever like that. There's this whole story about it, and people would make illegal copies. And eventually, it was a lawyer named Hank Rogers who worked for Nintendo who finally went over there and had a legit contract and was like, we're going to do this stuff for the Game Boy version and all this stuff. And eventually, you know, they were the ones that brought it to the Game Boy. Hank Rogers was technically the CEO of the Tetris Company. He became the CEO, but now the CEO is his daughter, Maya Rogers. So she basically runs it. And they are the ones that determine everything. Like, I don't even know if you noticed, but like all the Tetris games now, the pieces are always the same color. right? So, you know, like the tee piece is always going to be purple in every game. Like they determine.
Oh, God, yeah, I guess that's right. Okay.
Yeah, so they get to determine a lot of these like rules and stuff. So they kind of own Tetris.
Do they have any aspirations to promote more competitions?
The thing is, I don't think they really realized like its potential, but yeah. I think they're with the way that this has gone so viral in the last couple of years, when Joseph beat Jonas, when the 16-year-old beat the 7-time champion, yeah. You know, that video was up to like 10 million views on YouTube. Yeah. You know, I mean, honestly, I think more people have watched me commentating Tetris than fighting games at this point in time. Well,
it's so funny because I'm sure you've had the same experience. There's people that just don't get this job.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to explain, like, well, how could you sit there and talk and pontificate while these other guys. And I, you know, a lot of times I say, well, there's so much happening here. Mm-hmm, it's not just the stories, but there's strategies. They're doing this stuff to unpack, and I'm trying to translate the game. But a lot of the people that never got, I mean, most of them are back in Kansas, you know, where I'm from. But I sent that video to tons of people, and people, and they were into it for the first time ever. People said, oh my God, I get it. Okay, you know.
It showed up on, like, they played it. It's funny. So last year's championship, the one that Joseph won first time, ended up on ESPN2 during the Ocho block. So ESPN2 has the Ocho, right? Which is the joke thing where they have like lawnmower racing and all these crazy things. Yeah. But the Tetris block apparently got so popular that this last year, they just played it straight up on ESPN2 as just an hour. It went from a half hour block on the Ocho to an hour block on ESPN2. And the interesting thing about it is the guys who run the classic Tetris social media, like they just do a search for while it's on TV. And there's just like tweets all over the place. They're like, I'm watching Tetris and it's the most amazing thing ever. You know, they're like, I can't believe I thought this would be terrible, but this is the most compelling thing I've ever. Yeah. So Tetris just has that ability, and it's, you know, and like I said, like we were saying, like, I just feel like it's like the perfect video game for that reason. Yeah. You know, you don't have to explain it to anybody and they can already just like watch someone amazing at it. And you're like, I don't know how they're doing this.
What is it like to go from game to game? Because as a commentator, because different games have a different tempo to them. Is there one that you feel the most comfortable in or the safest as a commentator?
I mean, that would still be Street Fighter, probably, just because I've done it the most.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, a lot of the fighting games, it's really about kind of knowing the system and the storylines of all the players and everything like that. So sometimes, like, if I jump into a game that I'm not as familiar with, the hardest part, honestly, is that I don't know the backstories of a lot of the players, and I want to be able to talk about, you know, stuff that they do and everything. In terms of just the actual game mechanics, I mean, fighting games and Tetris are very, very different from each other. Yeah. But even within fighting games, it's very different because, you know, like Street Fighter, for example, is a little bit slower paced fighting game. So I can kind of talk about situations a little more. Then, like when I used to commentate like Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3, that game is so fast. You just don't have time to like.
Say. Yeah, there's like things you almost have to pass over.
You're just basically going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my god, you know, the whole time. And then I'll commentate something like Samurai Showdown, which is a very slow-paced game, but it's a very dangerous game. You can lose 80% of your life in one mistake. And so, like, the way I commentate that game is I try to be very tense and like, you know, very ass-clenched kind of, you know, oh my god kind of thing. So, you know, it's even within fighting games, like, I try to use different mentalities for the different games, you know. But, again, for me, in the end, it's mostly just about, you know, the story and the player decision-making and stuff. Because, like I said, I always want the players to be the ones that shine, you know, out of everything. So,
being, even though I think neither of us are old, we're both elders in a way in our scenes. I mean, is it ever... is it ever weird? Like, do you ever feel like imposter syndrome, being kind of like a leader in this scene, or is it ever weird to do public speaking?
I suffer from so much massive imposter syndrome.
I've had this too.
Yeah, I never think that, like, on my, I stream myself, you know, and like, yeah. you know, I've started just kind of streaming myself talking more, right? Yeah. Instead of like playing games, and people like to hear me talk. And I'm always like, why are people listening?
Yeah. yeah. No, I've had this where it took me about 3 years in Korea to finally get GSL. You know, I had to wait for like StarCraft 2 to come out. And then I remember like I started casting, I was looking around, I thought, why are they letting me do this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This
no,
is so strange.
Yeah. I mean, it's still weird to me. I mean, honestly, I mean, I told this story. I had this conversation with Mike Ross a long time ago, you know, when we were wondering whether it was worth it to kind of try to go all in onto yeah. this kind of thing. And, you know, one of the stories I always like to talk about, I'm a big basketball fan. Unfortunately, I don't watch much anymore because I'm so busy all the time. It's hard for me to keep up with seasons anymore. But, you know, the original basketball, the first superstar is this player named George Mikan. I believe he passed away like practically bankrupt, right? You know, because that's just the thing. It's like when it's brand new, nobody really gets the success out of it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I was talking about with Mike Ross. It was like the people who establish this kind of things are kind of like the martyrs in a weird yeah. way. Like you do it because you love it, because of the passion. You don't get to reap the benefits. You don't get... Honestly, if... By the time we hit like Mandalay Bay, like Evo was, like Evo is right now,
right.
like I thought I'd be long dead. You know? Like I really honestly didn't think it would have grown as fast as it even has.
Yeah.
And you know, the FGC is still small in comparison to a lot of the other games. And even still, like I, like if you told me, you know, back in 2009 or even in 2008, especially in 2008, because that was before Street Fighter 4 hit. If you told me that this is the situation, like, oh yeah, in over 10 years, you know, you're going to be flown out to Japan to do commentary for fighting games. Yeah. I would have just laughed at you. I was like, there's no way we'll get there.
Yeah.
And we're here. And so.
And I think it's going to keep getting bigger.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But to answer the question directly, it's very weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, people will come up to me and be like, oh, can I get, you know, a picture with you or autograph? And, you know, and it's like, but I'm just this dude who likes watching fighting games,
yeah.
you know, and talking about it and stuff. And so it's a very weird thing. But, you know, in the end, as long as I can get more people to watch it, and appreciate fighting games, then, you know, I'm going to keep trying to do it as much as I can. But, I mean, I don't know how much longer I can...
How is it doing commentary and then also streaming? Because everybody I've talked to says it's like this weird balancing act that the moment that you leave, your subs go.
Yeah.
And you know... It's streaming is all about consistency, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. this line of work, commentary, you basically can't stream
yeah,
and you can't have any consistency.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. So I'm trying to build up my streaming audience because, I mean, honestly, again, you know, the fighting game community doesn't have like the kind of financial backing that Riot can put into League or, you know, that you know, a lot of the other games can get. And so what ends up happening is like I need to build up my stream just to kind of like as a side revenue kind of thing, you know, as an extra kind of revenue. And, you know, the past 3 years, you're right, like the traveling and everything like that and my own, you know, mental, you know, laziness, you know, procrastination, whatever. Like I've not been consistent with the stream and everything like that. So I've never been able to build up the audience. I'm trying really hard this year to
yeah.
try to do more of a kind of thing and actually try to go more like your brother, like try to do more educational kind of stuff
yeah.
like that, you know, kind of corner that niche because he was really a great teacher. I feel like I'm kind of in that kind of mentality as well.
Yeah, I think what he did was really smart is getting in and just, especially for beginners, showing them,
yeah.
okay, here's how you play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We'll take the early stuff, you know, the day nine dailies and all that.
Yeah.
Here's how to play StarCraft. Yeah, because it's hard to balance
yeah.
streaming. I mean, content, like this is obviously it's not live, so I can kind of put it out when It's ready, but live streaming is tricky. So you're thinking about doing more like educational shows?
Yeah. So I used to do that. I used to do that a lot when I first started streaming, like 8 years ago or something like that, when me and David first started doing like our Tuesday show kind of thing. Yeah. You know, I have this show called First Attack, you know, and it was about like learning fighting games and stuff. And I just moved away from it because, you know, it did take prep work. You know, I wanted to make sure I had all my bullet points and everything, and right. I got lazy and I didn't do it a lot. Last year I said, I'm bringing it back, and I never did because, like I said, it's just that's how my brain is. But this year, like on the plane ride here to Japan, I just had my iPad out and I'm just like outlining everything. I'm trying to like schedule and scope out all the stuff that I want to do and everything because, you know, streaming really is about kind of like consistency kind of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And right now, like I said, I hate trying to sound all doom and gloom and whatever like that, but like financially, this hasn't been the most lucrative thing for me. I've basically been in the red for like the whole time I've been doing this, right?
Wow.
And
okay.
So, you know, I need to get something to work a little bit better and stuff. So fortunately, I mean, my previous job, I was a programmer. I made a lot of money back then, so I had a decent amount of savings. Recently, I just had to do a bunch of home repairs, so I kind of lost a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know how that is, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, it's like the more stuff you get, the more expensive it becomes. And
yeah, so, I obviously I would like to try to keep doing this as long as I can, but you know, there's financial realities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I could make the streaming stuff work this year, that would be really cool.
Is it hard negotiating like from event to event? Because for me personally, I found that to be very stressful. It's like, I mean, I'm not on the road, especially last year. I wasn't on the road that much. I might be traveling more this year, but yeah, like trying to talk to a company and convince them to give you money or whatever, you know, the accommodations are, and then
because one of the hardest things about it is because you know, for something like the Capcom Pro Tour, it's Capcom funded, and so you can be like, oh, you know hopefully I like this is how much I hope to get paid or whatever like that,
right?
But then like I mentioned I was at Frosty Faustings, right? Like this is literally run by just like these guys.
Right.
They're not a corporate bank.
They're not sitting on a pile of money that they're trying to keep from you. So.
Exactly, right? So, you know, so they're like, hey, we can only pay you this much, right? Like, even the Tetris stuff that I've done, they're still super grassroots, right? So they're not, you know, they're not sitting there rolling in cash kind of thing as well. And so, you know, like, it's weird because on some places you're like, I want this much. And then on other places, I'll take like, you know, one sixth of that, one tenth of that, you know, kind of thing. And so
there's this weird thing in esports now because it is big.
Yeah.
But in a lot of cases, the money's not there yet.
Yeah.
Or if the money is there, it's then entirely from the publisher.
Yeah. Or you know, it's like a lot of things. It's like the 1%, right?
Yeah.
You know, the money kind of just certain, a small subset of the people
see that. Yeah,
I've
thought about it kind of like Broadway almost. You know, like there's all these people in New York that are aspiring to be actors.
Yeah, but only
a few people are making a killing, you know? And then a lot of people are just starving artists. And I think esports is very similar as well.
Yeah. And it's a weird situation too, because I mean, people know me, you know, as like one of the premier Street Fighter, you know, commentators, but it's still, you know, obviously, like I said, let's put it this way. If I didn't live in Southern California, maybe I would be okay right now, but I mean, obviously the cost of living, I mean, I'm not in Northern California, I mean, at least.
Oh, it's insane. That's where my brother's at. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't want to say how much his apartment costs, but when I was there, I was like, wait, how much are you paying for this? This is... It's so expensive.
Yeah. But the hardest thing is, like, there's also a lot of opportunities in Los Angeles.
You know,
like, the ESL studios are there. You know, before it closed down, Machinima was there. You know, like, there's a lot of things.
This is why I'm in Seoul, is there's always StarCraft stuff in Seoul. And I all have to do is get on the train and go.
Yep.
There's no, like, what about hotels or...
Right.
At least
you have a train you can get on. I got stuck in traffic in Southern California. Oh, gosh.
How's this podcast been? I think we're going to wrap it up here because it's 6 now. You're casted at 7, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, let's we were gonna do a quick after show, but how was this? I really appreciate you doing this.
No, yeah, this is fine. I mean, this is really cool. Like I said, I'm absolutely honored to be here. And like,
I was telling
you the story before we started this that, you know, like when me and David first started commentating, you know, people were calling us the Tastosis of the fighting game community.
Dude, Danny had been a fan of you guys.
Yeah, which is blowing my mind. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, because there weren't that many people doing this, especially in the past. So whenever we'd see somebody else doing, we're like, hey, what's going on over here? And we're like, oh, fighting game cash is pretty good.
Right. And, you know, for me, like, you know, I feel like you guys are up there and we're still like down here. Like, you know.
No way, man. I love how authentic casting is in FGC. I mean, I'm not trying to knock on other game casters in other games, but I like the authenticity and how passionate people are.
It's funny too, because I don't know if you remember, but like when me and David first started doing this more seriously, we started wearing more shirts with ties and stuff like that. And I've just stopped that because, like, you know, like two of our comments, like Yipes and Logan, Tasty Steve, like these guys will never wear a tie, you know? And then the thing about it, I was like, that's fine because that's the fighting game community. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
there's
been
a lot of debate about are we supposed to be in ties or not? Because, I mean, you know, in Korea, they just, people wear suits on TV.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, it's fine. I don't know what we're supposed to be. Because sometimes you see these guys and they're so young and they're like in a suit and they look like they're going to mom prom or something. And it's just, it's weird. But then there's also people, some people can't dress themselves, you know, even if it's not in a suit. Or
I mean, true story, I've never learned how to tie a tie until
me
that
too.
Period.
Me too. No, I still don't know how to tie a tie.
Oh, yeah.
This day, I always try to get somebody else to do it. I'm refusing to grow up in that regard.
Oh,
all right. Well, thank you for doing this. We'll go to the after show now. Guys, thank you for listening to that episode, and from here on out, everything is going to be modern and obviously much more topical. So I do look forward to continuing to release this podcast. I feel like I've been getting better and better with each interview, and it's cool to do something new, something a little bit different from casting or streaming. Again, check my Twitch channel out, Tasteless TV on Twitch. I'm usually streaming every Monday and Thursday afternoon. I'm going to try to build a larger schedule, but for now, I'm still pretty busy with all this other stuff. Anyways, guys, thanks for watching. I love you. Bye-bye. Special thanks to our top supporters on Patreon, Seth N., Rohit Somebody, John Kernicki, and Charlie Sheever.